Great. Here we go then. Right, this is the sprint. Just to scratch the surface of this topic, just to flag this up, just so if you do run off at this point or you don't get anything else, and I just rattle off a few things, that if I'll send this to you, this or certainly put it on the website, this presentation, and that link takes you to a whole load of other material. So there's like 8, 9 lessons on there. There's loads of stuff, particularly on partnership development, sort of stuff that I'm sure David will be familiar with in terms of the sort of partnerships you have to build to support mission. But I think a lot of it is applicable to planting. There's loads of links to resources and stuff. So that is there. It's free. It's a free course. You have to sign up, but you're logged on to the LCPA now anyway. So you just find that by that link, and you can, go and do that at your own time, your own pace. So I'll just say a few things on partnership development and a few things on business development, because it seems like when Paul was in Corinth, he did a bit of both. I've got in my head now a chap called Mike Mathama, who was almost on this call actually this evening. It's a bit late in Kenya at the moment. It's they're a couple of hours ahead of us. But he almost joined us. But Mike has taught me a lot about these things, because he did both of those. So he's a gospel worker who's doing the building partnerships with people where you get other Christians, other churches to support your ministry. But he's also got a business on the side as well. And I think that model can work. So just say a few things about partnership development. We won't go through these, but there's a lot of reasons why people don't do it. And basically, you've got to go through these things and deal with each of those issues. There's a load of reasons why people don't even get across the line, because there's just a load of defeaters. Some of them are emotional, some of them are misconceptions about partnership development, some of them are how we think it's going to distract us from gospel ministry. There are answers to all of these, but you've got to deal with them. You've got to think, why am I not doing this? And deal with each of those in turn. I'll skip over that one. There's different sorts of lots of things. There's different sorts of givers. There's lots of different reasons why people give. Some people are giving to you because they believe in you personally. Some believe in, imagine it's Battersea. They really love Battersea. They love the fact that something's going to happen there. They love this particular patch that you're in. And they love the idea of the project. Some of them are giving because they've got a wider vision. They just want to see lots of churches planted across Mexico, wherever it is. They've got a particular vision for that wider place. Some are giving for a legacy. They want people to basically, well, to put it crudely, sometimes they want their name on the wall of a building. Sometimes people, but in a more sort of spiritual sense, people want to do something that they know is going to last, have an impact for many generations to come. Some people, sadly, are giving for leverage. I mean, you have to be honest about this. Some people are giving so that they have some kind of say, some kind of power, some sort of control over what you're doing and the planting. Some are giving because there's a need. So some people are need-driven. You come at me, you've got a crisis that I'll put my hand in my pocket, I'll give to you because it's a crisis. Some cultures are particularly need-driven, and you have to, has to be a real sense of urgency, and that something needs to be done now. Otherwise, why do we need to give anything? Some people are actually giving because they need to give. I mean, there's this guy who I remember giving to us when we were in Kenya, who he really wasn't too bothered about what we were doing. He just got a bonus and he needed to get rid of it. And it was like anything half decent, he'd give it to you. Now you might say, well, that's be lovely to find some people like that, but there are people like that, and it's actually more about them needing to give than it is about what they're giving to, and they're not actually that bothered to get your prayer letters or find out about what you're doing, but they just need to give. Now those are different sorts of giver, and so you'd need to tailor to, you need to be sensitive, like in evangelism, you're sensitive to things. You've got to be sensitive to the giver, why they're wanting to give, and address that particular need if it's a good one. Segmentation is where you basically say, look, I've got this 12,000 to raise, 20,000, whatever it is, and you just segment it by, look, realistically, I'm going to have this many people are going to give this much, this many people this much, this many people this much, and that's the way to do it, rather than just dividing it equally, you just think, okay, there's going to be reasonably, there's going to be different tiers of people going to be able to give. And, you know, practically, this is hugely helpful. The guy phoned me up. We just about got on the process of raising support. And a guy phoned me up. I think this was God being very, very kind to encourage us that this thing was going to work. And he phoned us up and he said, I think, you know, I've heard you're going to do this this mission thing. Love to support you. You know, how much do you need? Fortunately, it's good to know the answer to that question, because occasionally people do ask that. It's good to know the answer. Fortunately, I'd just done all our budget. I was able to give him the answer. And I was able to say, so, you know, we're thinking that that could probably mean that, you know, there's five people giving this much, probably about 20 people giving this much, 25 people giving this much. And he said, you know, please sign me up for that higher amount, the first one you mentioned. So it's like, great, thank you. Now, if I hadn't been able to say that, I'd have looked a bit silly, and I probably would have shot below that. I think, you know, often we kind of go below what is possible, you know, and giving that sort of range of possibilities means that someone can come in at a low level and not feel bad about that. But other people can be challenged to think, yeah, okay, I could come on at a higher level. In terms of generating a generosity culture, this is about in the church. So you really eventually want to get to the point after, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, to the point where the church has got such a, what is it, a critical mass, and has a generosity culture that they're able to support you as a church leader, as a planter, as a pastor. That YouTube video you can look at another time, but it's actually by the guy who wrote this thing called The Generosity Project. And this is a whole set of resources online. It's a book. And they were going to bring out the Generosity Project, and then the pandemic hit. And they were like, oh, is this really a good time to bring it out? And he actually decided, no, actually, even though it seems like a really bad time, maybe it's actually a good time. And they did roll out that, you know, you can watch that and see a number of reasons why they think that actually now, even though it seems a bit counterintuitive, it's not a bad time to be talking about generosity to believers, to be creating this kind of church culture. A number of different ideas for sort of generating that generosity culture in a church. I mean, preach the word. It's the word that does the work and will change people's hearts. Sometimes that needs to be, need to bring out the drama of some of Jesus's parables, you know, which are actually often quite funny about money. To maybe lampoon our own personal culture of money and show how kind of ridiculous it is. Also, one of the suggestions is have different cultures preach the word, because often you find that other cultures have a very, very different idea about money and pick up stuff in the Bible that we don't pick up, that I don't pick up. You know, like when I was in Kenya, actually, people are far, far more happy to talk about money than I was with a sort of English kind of thing. You know, people walk into your home and say, you know, how much do you pay for that sofa? Or, you know, you're like, how much do you pay for that TV? Or how much do you pay your house help? Or how much do you earn? And I'm like, oh, I'm not used to being asked these kind of questions. But it did mean that when they read the Bible, they kind of saw stuff that I would have thought, oh, the application is, you know, just loving one another in some general kind of wishy-washy way. And they were like, well, no, I think the application of this is, you send money to this guy who needs money, surely. And I was like, okay, giving as easy as possible. So that means kind of setting up direct debit sort of systems, that kind of thing, which wonderfully you can do in this country quite easily. There's different stewardship and different ways that they can make that possible. And we could get someone from stewardship to talk about that another time. Demonstrating integrity is about making sure that you have a church culture where it's very, very clear that, you know, the 2 Corinthians 10 thing, that you're doing not only what is right before God, but what is right before man. And so people can see that your handling of the money is, you're not handling the money basically as much as you possibly can. If you're the guy who's leading the church, that you've got systems, you've got processes, that it's all transparent, that the accounts are there if people want to look at them, that you're not using your personal bank account, that sort of stuff. Be generous as a church. So I think a church is more likely to give if they see that the the money is being given away themselves. So even as a small plant to be supporting another church somewhere else, even to a small extent, shows the church actually we really do believe in generosity as a church. We trust God to be giving to us as we give. Be generous yourself, have high expectations. I've mentioned that. Encourage your breadth of giving. So actually sometimes we think, oh, I don't want to mention this other thing that someone's trying to raise some funds for, because then people give to that and not to the church. But it's not a zero-sum game. If people give more, they will give more. If you actually encourage people to be supporting mission stuff going over here, this other church going over here, whatever, you know, actually people start to see, okay, actually this is a generosity culture, and they will actually give more. Cast bold gospel visions, because people will follow them with their wallets. And, you know, provide people help. So, you know, Christians Against Poverty, that kind of stuff, to help people in the mess of their finances. Okay, 3 minutes on business development. A few questions to ask. This is tent making, basically. That's the point of the tent illustration. So are you going to get employed or self-employed? I mean, some of these questions have been made for you already, but, you know, it is a choice. You can be employed by someone or self-employed. There's strengths and weaknesses to both of them, obviously. The degree of control, the amount of time, the amount of energy that needs, the amount of flexibility. Bivocational, co-vocational. How I understand that is that bivocational means you're working, I don't know, for Uber, for example, and you're planting a church, but you don't really want to be working for Uber forever. You'd really want to be set free from that to work full time for the church if you can. That's bivocational. Co-vocational is where, now I actually very strongly feel called to Uber driving or being a firefighter or being a teacher, for example. And you might feel, well, I really do want to stay being a school teacher, and I equally feel strongly I want to be planting a church. And so you do see that those going together on into the long term. The other dynamic there is between, to what extent do you want this to just provide income and you're not really too bothered about it being a place for mission? And to what extent do you want this to be a place for mission? So we're talking about the other thing that is not your church plant. So on one end of the spectrum is, I'm really just looking for what will pay me as much as it can with as little expenditure of time, energy as possible. If I'd obviously do a bit of evangelism if I can in whatever context, but that's not really what you're looking for. You're looking for the income stream. And, you know, ideally, if you've got an asset, you know, if you can rent out, if you can, you know, buy a house and you can rent out a house, that's an obvious one where it's a low investment of time. If you can buy a car and let, you know, rent that out for someone to use for minicabbing or something like that, those are the kind of classic ones where it's the lowest investment of time. But, you know, there'll be other ones possibly. At the other end of the spectrum, you are looking at this as a mission context. And you're not actually too bothered whether it makes any money. It'd be nice if it broke even, but you might even be willing to kind of spend out some money on this because you think it's such a key way of engaging in that community that you think, okay, I am going to run that gym, for example. I am going to run that sandwich bar because I just need to get into that context. And I'm not too bothered whether it makes any money or not. Does that make sense? In the middle is kind of what people think probably the Apostle Paul was doing. He was using it as a source of income to help support his planting, but also his tent making was a context for discipleship and mission encounters. So that, you know, that might be a sweet spot. It might be what you're going for. That's the kind of mission as business type stuff that sometimes people talk about. It's quite hard to pull off though. Okay, this is the last slide, I think, the last slide I mentioned. This is in terms of the, there's something called the Business Model Canvas. If you Google it, a thing called Strategizer has come up with it. It's basically, if you are going to come up with your own business, you need to work out, do people actually want it? How do you work out the cost structure? And, you know, is it feasible? Can you actually do it? Can you build that? And classically, as I've seen a couple of friends try this, one of the things that they classically don't do is work out what all the inputs are. So they leave out some of the key things that actually they find out this needs. And then that tips the vibe, the viability becomes, it's not viable anymore. Because it's like, I thought I could do this, start a school, for example. And then I realize, hang on a minute, I've got to run an English school or whatever. I need this permit and this license, and I need this health and safety thing and this thing and this thing. And these cost so much money and time that this is not actually worth doing anymore. I'll send you a link to it. This guy, Mike Mathamo, I mentioned you had some of these suggestions as well. But I think the bottom line is that bottom one, that actually not everyone is cut out to do business. I don't think I am, for example. Not everyone has those skills to do it. So if you can do it and you can make money and you think you can do that, great. But it's not an easy thing to do by all accounts. You talk to people who've started their own stuff, it's not easy to do.